KKCR would love to thank all of the following restaurants and businesses that fed all of our volunteers during this fall membership drive. Mahalo to Papayas in Kapa'a, Pauhana Pizza in Kilauea, Coconut Cup in Kapa'a, Barracuda in Hanalei, The Greenery Cafe in Lihue, North Shore Grinds in Princeville, Ya Kadus Bagels, Hale Girl Island Suites, Hideaways Pizza Pub in Princeville, Mediterranean Gourmet in Haena, CJ's Steak and Seafood in Princeville, Oasis on the Beach in Kapa'a in Waipuli, Kenny Kaona, Harvest Market and Kayla Coberly in Hanalei. Thanks again for feeding all of us during the fun drive.
Aloha. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and it's now time for Health Talk. This KKCR program is supported in part by Tahiti Nui, Heaven on Earth, and the Greenery Cafe.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihilai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
The Greenery Cafe in the heart of Lihue, one block off Arai Street on Akahi Street, serving flavorful and organic soul food, wraps, smoothies, herbal iced teas, desserts, and vegetarian meals. Located in the lush garden setting near Tip Top Cafe, call-in, takeout, and catering available. Open Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch. The Greenery Cafe, hearty, healthy soul, 246-4567 or online at thegreenerycafe.com.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, everybody. Welcome to Health Talk today. On this beautiful Monday here on Kauai, we have a really interesting show. And I'm Dr. Donna Kaplan, and I host Health Talk the first and third Mondays of the month. So today, we're going to be talking about health concerns from microwave towers and other EMF sources. And we have two experts calling us. I think we have at least one of them on the phone right now. We're going to be introducing Dr. William Ray, who's an expert in environmental medicine. He's the founder and director of the Environmental Health Center in Dallas, and he is trained for many years as a thoracic and cardiovascular surgeon, and I believe he's just focusing on environmental medicine at this time. He's the author of 8 medical textbooks and 150 scientific papers. And we also are going to have Stuart Simonson joining us again. He came on about a month ago when we were talking about the microwave issue and the reefs here degrading on Kauai. And he is a chemical engineer. And I've also asked Terry Lilly to join us here in the studio. He's from Kauai, and he's our marine biologist here. And he has been observing and documenting the coral reefs here on Kauai for a long time. And so let's see, are our callers here? Dr. Ray, are you here with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Thank you for joining. And Stuart? Are you, Stuart Simonson, are you here?
Yes, I am.
And Terry, you're with us?
I think so.
Okay, very good.
I can see you, so I must be here.
I'm very excited that you all are here with us. So let's start with Dr. Ray. Tell us about your background and your work. so we can
hear.
Well,
I'm a cardiovascular surgeon, and I have done surgery for many years, and then because of an event in my life of a son who almost died, I switched to environmental medicine, and of course, a lot of cardiac surgery is environmental medicine, lung surgery, you know, different lung diseases and different cardiac diseases are in that. So what we did is we built the Environmental Health Center, which is specifically designed to be less polluted.
Mm-hmm.
And we have good filtration. We have porcelain walls, ceramic floors, no carpets, no pesticide, no solvents. We don't allow perfume or microwaves in there. No toxic chemicals for cleaning. And we have 22 beds for patients to live in at the Marriott, which is close to us. And we specifically designed those also. And therefore, we helped a lot of people. We collected a lot of data. We've seen probably about 25,000-30,000 patients now with environmentally triggered diseases such as blood vessel diseases, chronic fatigue, weakness, brain dysfunction, asthma, GI upsets, GU upsets, fibromyalgia, the whole gamut of medicine, and found triggering agents. We've got several techniques we use to provoke people after they've cleared at subclinical levels and reproduce their symptoms so we can know what's going on. We do a lot with nutrition also.
Uh-huh. So you see a lot of folks who are ill from chemical sensitivities, I'm imagining.
Yes, we do. Many sensitivities for chemicals, molds, and mycotoxins, which is the rage in America right now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who are solvent exposure, pesticide, herbicide exposure,
uh-huh.
So on down the line.
And I'm very curious. You said that you got into environmental medicine when your son almost died. Can you tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind sharing how that changed your view?
It's been about 30 years ago, and they wanted to put him on. He had bad asthma. And nobody looked for the cause. They just want to put him on steroids. And pulmonologist told me, I said, I can't accept that. He said, well, if you're so damn smart, do it yourself. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's grown up now, no medication, no shots, anything.
And so you've been practicing medicine for how long now?
Well, a pretty long time, since 1962, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found in your experience with electromagnetic frequencies?
Well, we did a controlled double-blind study on patients. We took 100 patients who are electrically sensitive. And, of course, you know, they were microwave sensitive, they were TV sensitive, they were shortwave sensitive, they were people who couldn't tolerate smart meters in their houses, Wi-Fi, the whole gamut of electrical magnetic. And we put them in a controlled environment, and then we did studies on them, and did provocation studies of different frequencies, reproduced their symptoms, and then cleared them. And we found that a lot of them are sensitive to minerals like sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, copper, so on down the line. And so we treated them for that also. And we found that about 80% of the electromagnetic people had hypersensitivity to chemicals or foods or molds.
And this was back, this was before other people were testing for electromagnetic.
So, yeah, we published that paper about 5 years ago, I think.
Oh, 5 years ago. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, and So why don't we just talk a little bit about what we brought up on the show a month ago. Terry Lilly, thanks for joining us. And I'd really, you know, like for you to share your observations of the reef. And I think we also have Stuart Simonson, chemical engineer here. And the two of you have been collaborating on information. So,
yeah, let's just... I have a background. I had the largest reptile captive breeding zoo anywhere in the world in California.
Wow.
And captive bred about 70 species for the very first time anywhere in the world. And in our captive breeding center, including the Dallas Zoo and the San Antonio Zoo and Fort Worth Zoo, we found out that our captive bred cold-blooded reptiles were dying if they were raised under high power lines. So that was, we started that project over 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the last 10 years, I've been doing underwater survey work on the North Shore of Kauai as a marine biologist professionally, and have been documenting our reefs and doing underwater movies for television, National Geographic, all kinds of different media places worldwide. And in 2012, I started to see a massive coral reef die-off on the North Shore of Kauai, reported it to the University of Hawaii, NOAA, USGS, Scripps Institute. Since that point in time, all of us together have done over 1,000 scuba dives documenting the reefs on the North Shore of Kauai, and we've documented the fastest disease growth anywhere ever seen in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Within just the last 3 years. Since 2012, about 50 to 60% of all of our coral reefs have died here. And the coral reefs that are left alive now, about 90% of those are diseased. So we really have a major problem. And all of the folks, all of the top scientists worldwide that have been helping me with on this project, they all have not been able to come up with any clue at all as to why our reefs here are dying so quickly. And then when I met Stuart Simonson and he explained to me about the radiation issues going on here with the U.S. military, it kicked right back into my zoo days, so I looked into it with Stuart. And sure enough, where the military radiation microwaves have been accelerated for the purpose of warfare here in Kauai is the exact area where the reefs have the most damage.
So, Stuart, do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Terry and I, the last month since our show, have been, you know, talking back and forth and going over a lot. You know, he takes a lot of great high-res photography.
Yes.
And I think to explain it simply, I believe what's happening is your reef is corroding. It's going under, undergoing accelerated marine corrosion. And it's chloride attack of the calcium carbonate reef. So that's the first thing that flagged me when I went there a year ago. It's not just that the millions or billions of coral polyps, which are an animal, are dying. The actual skeleton, calcium carbonate skeleton reef, is breaking up and disappearing. And you know, so that tells me it's probably not a viral attack or you know, immune system, because the skeleton is not alive.
Mm-hmm.
So that clued me in on it. And I've been looking at the photographs, and it, you know, the reef is turning orange in places. And it's turning into this, what looks like precipitate, and I believe that's calcium chloride, which is orange. And so what's happening is, I believe, your reef's undergoing accelerated corrosion. The calcium carbonate turning into calcium chloride and then dissolving in the water and going away. And what accelerates corrosion in marine environments is stray electrical currents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another clue to me about what's happening there. And how does a radar or an antenna do it? Well, electromagnetic induction was one of the great discoveries of the 20th century. You know, magnetic fields can induct electrical currents in, you know, salt water is a good conductor. So I believe you've got a super high concentration of high-gain, high-power military antennas and radar stations, and I believe it's diseasing your reef and basically corroding it, to be simple. Just like the battery terminals on your battery in your car turn green, that copper chloride, well, your reef is turning red and orange, and that's a sign of calcium chloride, which is a sign of corrosion. And marine corrosion is very common. They have cathodic protection systems which try to pull the chloride negative ions away from your marine structures and boats to protect them. We found a good example from just 2 or 3 years ago. A new military warship started disintegrating within just, I think it was less than a year of operation. And I researched it, and sure enough, they found that the corrosion increased when they turned on the high-power radar stations on the warship. So I think it all makes sense.
That's pretty amazing, a new ship in 1 year.
Yeah, it made the news and all, and I've got the documentation on my site. But, you know, basically, it happens around marinas where people plug their boats in. Sometimes you'll get a ground connection that's not made, or it's grounding out into the water. People's boats will start corroding quickly, and due to the electrical current.
And with the folks, that especially live here on Kauai, that what Stuart's talking about is, I took a high def video of the reefs down at Nualolo and Mililii along the Nepali coastline. Now, there's no people that live there. There's no cities. There's no pollution. There's no nothing. In 2013, the reefs were as pristine as can be. We found out the military upped their electronics in the area dramatically at that time. In 2014, when I surveyed the reefs, they were dead. Currently, those reefs have all turned orange, rust-colored. And the pictures have baffled about everybody on planet Earth until Stuart saw them. Because it didn't make any sense to us.
And this used to be a pristine reef.
It had been for 1,800 years for the Hawaiians that lived here.
How do you measure whether the radar is up or down? Can you measure that?
Well, what you can do is it's antenna theory, basically, which has been in place for 50 to 100 years. So you can model a high-gain parabolic radar, and what happens is, depending on what the atmosphere is doing, whether it's low cloud cover, precipitation, the refractivity and the power that reflects back to the surroundings varies with, you know, it's just like the Doppler weather radar, right? It goes from green to yellow to red. That's radiation power reflected back. So the time that your radiation load will be the highest is when your weather is the worst. You get the most reflection. And that's when I was tracking fish kills in Florida and all. I was noticing a lot of them are dying around radar stations after weather events.
Are you assuming that the amount of radiation and frequencies is the same every day?
I think it varies all the time with the weather. And it's also got to do with the number of radars and antennas in an area. I think it's a cumulative effect.
I see.
And you've got the equivalent of maybe, you know, 25 or 30 weather radars. Of course, a lot of them are military tracking radars, but they're all bouncing off the atmosphere to different degrees at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a high radiation load in the atmosphere. And then, you know, that bounces between the water and the clouds and the trees and gets absorbed and, you know, bounces back and forth.
Now, you have a database that has the radars listed, and you've coordinated it through Google Earth, so it's really fascinating. And then you came up with a map of Kauai. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, Google Earth is a free program, so anybody can install Google Earth. And then out on the Google Earth community, I put my radar database, which is all from public sources. And it's got about 2,000 high-power, high-gain radar systems, and then another 8,000 high-gain satellite broadcast antenna.
Mm-hmm.
So they're about the same gain as the radar. The radars are higher power, but the microwave satellite dishes are constantly. So I have about 10,000 antennas, and you can download them in Google Earth and zoom in. You can see the radars. And that's all pulled from, you know, just probably a year's worth of research from multiple sources, which I've actually referenced on my site.
And so folks can go to your blog and find this if they
yeah,
want to download it.
I think it says radar database, or it's on the right-hand menu.
Could you just let folks know what the blog is so that they can look it up if they want?
Yeah, so the blog name is Dark Matters A Lot, D-A-R-K Matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S, A Lot, A-L-O-T.com. And on the menu, it actually says Google Earth Database Download on the right-hand menu.
So how much radiation do you believe is coming from these stations? And you have that in your database, right?
Yeah, so the environmental impact statement that was filed has approximately 30 million watts of high power, high gain pulse radars. Now, the reason I say high gain is they're focused like a flashlight beam, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what that does is that takes the million watts and focuses it with a gain of, say, 40, 45, and you end up with the equivalent. If you happen to be in the beam, that's equivalent to being in front of a few billion watts of like a TV antenna. So, but it's a focused beam like a searchlight. So, but if you looked at the equivalent power in the focus beam, that's more like just about a trillion watts of power. It's focused. And the reason it focuses, it has to reach 1,000 miles or 2,000 miles through the atmosphere to track missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that comes from the satellites too, Stuart, that far.
So then your Earth stations, and that's in my database, those microwave Earth stations have to pierce through the atmosphere 20 or more miles up through to satellites at geostationary orbits and all.
If I had a patient who was sick in Dallas, Texas, how would I measure whether this influences them?
So what you got to do from an environmental standpoint, and I'm not going to say this is easy, you have to know what frequency. You look at my database and see the antennas in the area. You can see what frequency.
Okay, yeah.
There's a couple companies. NARDA is one, NARDA.com. They make portable units where you can go and it'll scan certain frequency ranges and detect pulses or transmissions at different frequencies. So you can get an idea of the environmental load in the area. You know, we're hit from all sources today, right?
And this would be different than the radio frequency and the electromagnetic meters.
You mean the smart meters? Are you talking about the smart meters?
So the smart meters, I think they're, I haven't researched them as much, but I think that, you know, like your microwave oven, 2.5 gigahertz, a lot of your Wi-Fi routers in your house are 6 gigahertz. Most of the military antennas on Kauai, a lot of them are 2 gigahertz up to 12 gigahertz. You know, that's the microwave region, and I think those smart meters are in the same category. So you almost have to do an environmental survey, and what I'm saying is you don't just do it during clear weather. You actually have your power load hitting the ground in the area is actually highest during bad weather. That's when everything refracts and reflects off the atmosphere. Or the other thing I'm seeing is near flight paths of airports where you've got low-flying aircraft where the radiation, you know, because they have a metal body, they get a lot of reflection. So in the maps I've done on my site, I'm seeing, and I've correlated it at least visually to more disease clusters that I can find near airport flight paths. I think there's more reflection and more, you know, environmental load on the area. And, you know, that's what the maps show. It's, you know, I kind of like my mapping, which is basically epidemiology. I call it epidemiology for engineers because I'm sort of reverse engineering it, trying to figure out, you know, I've taken existing cluster studies, which, you know, were million-dollar, multi-million-dollar studies, and all I've done is overlaid them in Google Earth with my radar and antennas, looking for a correlation.
And we did the same thing, by the way, with the coral reefs along the North Shore, 20 miles of the North Shore. I did a map on the hot zones that had the largest amount of die-off, and sure enough, those correlated with the largest amount of production of microwave radar towers. So these things have been correlating quite well. Hey, just real quick, William, can you explain, or Stuart, to me or anyone else, what actually does a microwave do to living tissue, like in a human body? I mean, why are these things dangerous?
They're
dangerous because they can alter tissue. I mean, look, what do microwaves do? If you got a microwave oven, it can cook things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it alters the membranes and causes people to function aberrantly. And the people we get a lot of times have confusion, short-term memory loss, loss of balance, weakness and fatigue are some of the big things, and a lot of damage to their blood vessels, which I think is probably punching holes in the blood vessel membranes, you know, to go to the tissue. These people are very hypersensitive to, you name it. And of course, they lose their foods eventually because they can't handle foods because of this. And then they become non-functional.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm up and down the North Shore of Kauai here. I scuba dive, and I'm out in the environment almost every day. And I've been doing this for 40 years. So within the last few years, when I get out of the water diving in these areas of these high-powered antennas, and I am very sensitive to energy, big time, and animals. That's why I get along with them quite well. Yeah. But when I get out of the water, I've had massive bouts with fatigue. I've had muscle cramping that I've never had before.
Yeah.
Headaches and heart palpitations.
Well, see, that's classic in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And tell us, you also had a heart issue.
I've been actually waiting to talk to another cardiologist on this issue. I'm extremely healthy, and I won't get into that, but low cholesterol, I'm thin, I'm super athletic, low pulse rate, last guy in the world that would have a heart attack. And I was actually out diving at 30 feet deep about a year and a half ago, documenting the reefs with my video camera, holding on to the actual reef structure at about 30 feet deep under there. And I was near the area of the antennas, and there was also a military warship about a half mile offshore. And I suffered what later on was told was probably electrocuted. I had a heart seizure, and my heart completely twisted. By the time I got to the local medevac place in Lihue here in Kauai, they said I was going to die. I had no chance of living. My blood enzymes levels were through the roof. I was in complete cardiac arrest, and they luckily talked to a doctor at Straub Hospital in Honolulu and medevaced me on an aircraft, and I made it there alive, and they put in 3 heart stents. And I've always, you know, and so has a lot of other people, pondered, you know, they're going, Terry's the last guy in the world to ever suffer a heart attack. So any feedback on that?
Yes, you get vascular spasm from these exposures in our experience, and, of course, that would be the reason for the stents. Now, and the other thing probably is if you depleted yourself of magnesium, that can cause vascular spasm, and it can cause arrhythmias. Mm-hmm. And we see that all the time. And we try not to put stents in because then you've got an implant syndrome from the plastic of the stents or the metal from the stents, you see.
How frequent do you see that with the stents, doctor?
It's hard to say, but quite frequently.
I'll just add, calcium and magnesium are a couple of the most reactive minerals and metals. In other words, they are softer, they're more easily attacked by chloride attack and all that. They're more reactive. They corrode more easily. So that's just a... And I really believe...
Could this have something to do with... And it's kind of interesting. I had was out boating yesterday evening. I had my research boat and took a couple of gals out. And one of them just moved back to Kauai. She used to live here. And she just moved back. She's been swimming every day. Down in Haena, right where we have a huge dial for the reefs and a lot of these microwave towers beaming overhead. And she just said, Terry, she goes, I don't get it. Every day now when I get out of the water snorkeling and I come in and lay down and relax, I start getting these real intense muscle spasms in my legs that I've never got before. Yeah. And I get those same things. It usually hits me about 2 o'clock at night. Strange. I'll bolt out of bed with an unbelievable muscle spasm.
Yeah, that could be some depletion
well,
there.
See, that can either be from potassium loss, but most likely it's calcium and magnesium dysfunction. And sometimes if you take a lot more magnesium, that'll stop those.
Okay.
Now, there's a physiological principle that's involved. And if you, and I don't know how this would happen with the electric stuff, but if it changes the membrane holes, calcium goes into the cells, and then that combines with protein kinase A and C and gets phosphorylated, and it can increase sensitivity up to 1,000 times. So you might become sensitive to things in your surrounding that you normally wouldn't.
That's interesting you should say that, because I'll tell you, I live in a hot, humid environment.
Yeah.
And lately I have become, and I can tell, hypersensitive to mold when it rains.
Yeah, I was just going to say, mold would be the big thing, okay?
Oh, I cough, like, I go.
Why would you say mold would be the big thing?
Well, because mold is ubiquitous in the environment. I mean, that's the way nature rots.
Yeah, we have a lot of mold here. And a lot of people are sensitive. We also have Vog, which is on the Big Island from the... What is
volcano,
it?
Kilauea.
Thank you. Yeah. The volcano. We have it's gases.
You get a lot of sulfur
out
from that, don't you?
Yeah, other chemicals as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
So
well, it looks like you've got the syndrome a little bit then, you know.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing, too, is I'm fortunate enough to travel with my work a lot, and I've spent time in Moorea and Tahiti and Bora Bora and recently in the Caribbean and Costa Rica. And I've done over 5,000 scuba dives in my career, but I live right here on the North Shore of Kauai, right in the middle of this. When I go to these other places, within a couple of days, I pretty much feel back to normal. When I scuba dive, I get energetic instead of fatigued, and I don't suffer these cramps and things.
That's right. Your system calms down.
It's like it's agitated here. That's really about the best way that I could put it. I feel agitated, huh?
Yes, well, that will do it.
So, you know, we're talking also about the disintegration and the corrosion of the reefs. And over time, what is the implication for the calcium in our bones? You know, what would you say about that, both of you?
Well, I don't think we know, but it certainly could be very important, you know. I can see it's changing, because if you've got calcium-magnesium shifts, of course, you could have a destruction of membranes in the bones and then have it shift out.
Right.
And Donna, there's some research papers already that talk about calcium voltage channels and calcium, you know, effects.
Can you speak up a little, Stuart?
Yeah. So there's already some research papers that talk about calcium, the effects from EMF.
Yeah, there was a man calcium that was studying that. Do you have his name? I know when.
Yeah, Andrew is a scientist over in Europe, but he's got. I'll put it out on my site, but I've referenced it, and he talks about how actually pulsed electromagnetic fields are more biologically active than regular analog or, you know, regular waves. So pulsed radiation, and it's because, you know, when you...
Like the smart meter.
And the military towers.
And
the
military.
Most, everything, even our cell towers, 4G cell towers, everything is going digital. And now we have these pulses that are, you know, 500 times a second that go from, you know, 0 to a few thousand watts or a few hundred thousand watts hitting you or hitting the environment. And, when you swing a magnetic field back and forth, you trigger electrical currents in electrolytes or conductors. So you induce electrical current. And we're all basically made of electrolytes. So.
Yes.
Well, and Stuart got to see this firsthand, by the way. And for William, just for your, just to give you a little knowledge here, in Hawaii we have these what are called mound corals, M-O-U-N-D, because they're mounding, kind of the way they grow. Many of these corals are 2,000 years old and up, so they're bulletproof. They've lived through quite a few environmental fluctuations. And these mound corals, some of them are up to 2,000 to 3,000 pounds, the size of a large car.
Yeah.
And these mound corals they're not diseased like what people would think they would see. They're simply dissolving into mud. None of the scientists have seen anything like it. And Stuart, you had just kind of addressed that in one of your articles. What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, so again, I just talked about it, but marine corrosion, which is accelerated by electrical currents, it takes a calcium carbonate structure, and the chloride's ions will attack it, and basically the calcium gets pulled off the skeleton and makes calcium chloride, which then dissolves in water, and what's left as a precipitate is orange. So and it looks like precipitate. If you look at the reef structure, it's turning into this real filamentous red and orange.
And our visibility has gone downhill. People used to come here all the time for crystal clear water, and now 10 to 20 feet is more normal.
And I told Terry, that's your reef floating in the water. That's why your visibility is so bad. It's pulled all the calcium and minerals off, and they're now dissolved and floating in the ocean. That's what I believe is happening. And your reef, which is that coral skeleton is probably a few million years old, back after the volcanoes erupted, and it's going back down to the lava rock.
Yeah.
Now, has anybody measured the free calcium and magnesium in the water?
No, we haven't yet, and that's a proposal for our new nonprofit. We want to do that study. We also want to do, which you would probably enjoy to see, immune deficiency studies on the corals in the area.
Oh, yeah. A lot of things we've gleaned from that,
And I would like to communicate with you because we have top scientists from around the world right now putting together the best possible study, and then we're going to put that out funding. We have it. You can look at it. It's a new nonprofit. It's reefguardians.org. So reefguardians.org. So we want to put together this really world-class study here on the North Shore of Kauai, get it funded, and then also get some experts like you folks over here to help out with the work.
So
I'm glad to.
That's great. Great. Thank you. So, Stuart, you were talking to me yesterday when we talked on the phone about the University of Chicago, and that they noticed from your maps that there was increase of osteoporosis and asthma, right?
Well, yeah, and that's just preliminary findings, so I don't want to. But I'll just say that I was asked to ship my radar database and microwave database off, and I've done that. And there's a research study going on looking at correlation between my radar database and, health effects. And that's ongoing. So I agree with what you said. And it makes sense,
Sure.
I said, there's already some published information on, calcium effects and EMF, and your bones are made of calcium, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now the other thing, a lot of what I've been doing, of course, I don't have, I did statistics on marine life kills, and it looks like there was a high correlation in Florida. Mm-hmm. I've gone ahead and done a lot of other epidemiology maps, and I've taken existing cancer cluster studies and some autism cluster studies, and I've just overlaid them in Google Earth along with my radar database. And I'm seeing some pretty strong visual correlations. In other words,
with the microwave towers.
Yeah, and these are radar stations. A lot of them are at airports, but a lot of the broadcast stations are, you know, these are, you know, your networks that are broadcasting up to satellites. Those are, mm-hmm. they're lower power, but they're still very high gain, and that's how they punch through the atmosphere. So, you know, I got all these maps online, and you can take a look for yourself.
And Stuart, just real quickly for our listening kind of audience, because it does get confusing. We're using back and forth with these towers, microwaves and radar. Can you explain to the general public how those are the same and different at the same time?
Yeah. And the difference between cell towers as well.
Yeah, so it's all electromagnetic radiation, okay? Even visible light is a form of electromagnetic radiation. Radio frequencies are on the lower end, and then you get into the microwave frequencies. There's a transition.
So just a different frequency of electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah, okay. FM to, you know, megahertz radiation up to gigahertz. So it's all microwave, radio frequency to microwave, megahertz to gigahertz. And then, you know, the radio frequency towers, they tend to be lower power AM, FM, but they're continuous. And then, but then the radars and all are typically pulsed. You know, they're much higher power, higher gain, and they pulse them on and off at the gigahertz frequencies, you know, 200 to 1,000 times a second.
And out of geographically, how does the North Shore of Kauai compare with the amount of these towers versus other places on the planet?
Other than possibly Guam, I think you've got the highest. In other words, I haven't mapped the whole world, but for U.S. and territories, I would say, yeah, I think you're number one.
Yeah, right here in beautiful Kauai.
Yeah. And you're if you could see it, you'd be glowing. You look like a big strobe light going, you know, flashing on and off 1,000 times a second if you could see it.
So
if it was visible light.
So what you found through your databases is that they are located on the northwest shores of Kauai, right?
Or yeah. It's
not on the shores, but up in the mountains, up in Kokei.
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing. They put them, they're up about 2,000 feet on the cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an example. Your Kokei State Park, mm-hmm. that military high-gain tracking radar, I think it's a National Guard radar, the safe distance reported by the FAA around that is 1,700 feet. You just had 170 adult, you know, sea-going seabirds hit the deck around that radar.
Yeah, the shearwaters, the endangered shearwaters.
These were adults. These weren't little ones that just hatched that don't know how to fly. These were, I don't know how much they weigh, but they're big birds. And, you know, they're saying it was the lights, and I'm saying, well, you know, instead of the 100-watt light bulb, why doesn't someone check the 25,000-watt high-gain radar? And and the other part of that is the FAA guideline 1,700 feet. The tourist parking lot is 900 feet away.
You drive right by these towers and you park there. And also, Stuart, I want to bring this up for all of our listeners in Haleiwa over on the beautiful North Shore of Oahu, because I've been studying the reefs there underwater too for 15 years, and in Waimea Bay and the Marine Reserve in the last year, over 50% of the mound corals have died, and the rest are diseased. And so first thing I did is say, whoa, wait a minute, Waimea Bay is starting to look like, and Shark's Cove is starting to look like the North Shore of Kauai. So I alerted Stuart, and Stuart, tell everyone in Haleiwa what you found up above Waimea Bay.
Yeah, so they got a big antenna farm up there on the hill, and those are mostly satellite broadcast antennas. So a lot of high-gain antennas. And then about 5 miles inland, maybe 5 to 10, there's some high-powered, you know, radar stations. You know, the other part of this, which I haven't studied enough, but, you know, the other thing that's gone on in the last 3 to 5 years is everybody's put in high-power 4G cell towers and, mm-hmm. you know, added more power to them. I haven't studied those, but what my maps are showing is it's a cumulative effect of EMF mm-hmm. in a localized area. Mm-hmm. And it's all electromagnetic, either megahertz or gigahertz frequencies. Mm-hmm. And I think it just is additive.
Right. And so not only do we have the microwave towers, we've got Wi-Fis and cell phones and cell towers.
And it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on.
It's all radiation, and it really isn't good for you. I actually can't find a paper that says radiation is good for you.
And there are a lot of papers that have been done that are correlating the cell phone towers and microwave towers with cancer and other health issues.
I've got my maps. I think it's obvious, but it's visually obvious. And I sent one in Long Island to one of the researchers, and she sent back, she said, wow. Because they did a big health study on Long Island and couldn't tie it to either cell towers or pollution from factories. But when I laid the radars in there, it's like, wow.
Yeah, and the one thing that Stuart got to see when he came over diving with me is when you go diving and you look at the coral reefs here, the impact, the degradation of the reefs is unbelievable. And you look at it and your eyes want to say, okay, I'm watching a movie. This can't be true. So if something can kill a million-year-old reef and thousand-year-old corals, there's got to be something there dramatically off balance, whatever it is.
And it doesn't. I looked at the reports of the Hanalei River. I didn't see a huge pH imbalance. In other words, what I see for, tens or hundreds of tons of calcium carbonate disassociated and dissolving, I think it would take truckloads and truckloads of hydrochloric acid to do that.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a tremendous amount. And, so I explored what are options. And we mentioned last show, you can go on Amazon for $200 and buy a pulsed electromagnetic water conditioner that breaks down calcium carbonate scale that builds up in your pipes. So it breaks it down. And I think it's corrosion. That's what's happening. You've got accelerated corrosion. And it's...
That's what happens in humans also. Find that the... people who have reactions a lot of times become very acidic, and we give them calcium carbonate and sodium carbonate, bicarbonate, to neutralize their reactions.
Yeah.
And you a lot of times can abort acute reaction with that. Let's say, like, you had, when you came out of the water there, if you had had calcium carbonate and taken a lot of it, it might have buffered you that you'd been okay.
Do you want to hear something really strange that you just brought
that
up? As a biologist, I pay attention to these things. Getting out of the water in these areas, I've had amazingly bad heartburn, and I carry my Alka-Seltzer with me.
Oh,
well, there you are.
I'm not joking. I have it in the car right now. And I've been paying attention to where I dive and how much Alka-Seltzer I need. That's an honest-to-God story.
That makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
Because I see that all the time in our real sick patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's unreal.
I've seen that too. And like you were saying, Dr. Ray, the chemical sensitivity and the electromagnetic sensitivity goes together.
Yes.
Yes.
It's an additive effect is what it is.
Right. Were you going to say something, Stuart?
Yeah, I was just going to point out one other thing that matches what I would typically say. I work a lot in industry and forest industries. I've done a lot of bleaching systems. And the steps that are happening, is the first thing that's happening is this bleaching effect. And it is correlated with temperature, but I can tell you that chloride ions are one of the strongest bleaching agents. That's why you use chlorine bleach at home.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that's happening is you're seeing the algae go away and some bleaching, which matches chloride attack. And then you're seeing, of course, all the polyps die, which if you're heavy chloride ions, I have a saltwater pool at home and I have an electrolysis cell. And it makes chloride ions and kills any bacteria. So that happens. And then the last thing is the electrolysis breaks down minerals, calcium, magnesium, and turns them into salts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I think is happening.
Well, if you look at your map, since you sent me the map and same with Don and everyone just a couple weeks ago, since the last time I talked to you, Stuart, I've done about 10 scuba dives up and down the North Shore of Kauai. And in the areas of the highest amount of electromagnetic radiation, there definitely is more coral bleaching. In the outer lying areas, like Pila'a, that are outside of these electronics, you know, if you study the maps that you have, there was zero coral bleaching there the other day.
That's
so
very interesting.
There's a definite correlation happening right now on that.
The power drops off as 1/1 the distance squared. So you should see a drop-off the further away you get from the source.
How far before you stop seeing a drop-off?
Well, you know, what I'm seeing with the radars and the earth stations is I think it's 5 or 10 miles.
10 miles, huh?
In the marine life, I'm pretty sure I'm seeing an effect of about 10 miles, within 10 miles. And then it's dropping off. I mean, I'm talking dead fish, dead manatee, dead dolphins, and high number of fish. You know, fish are pretty sensitive, and, you know, so.
Well, the good thing about studying the corals is they don't move around, so. You know where they're at.
And so that's true, huh? And so the health effects you said that you're seeing in humans are about 5 to 10 miles.
If you got to, you know, look at my maps, but it's within a few miles, and yeah, 5 or 10 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing, and I'm just laying in my. And you can do this. Anybody listening could do this. They could take Google Earth, download my radar database. Go pull down the cluster studies I've referenced and lay them over it, and you know, look for yourself. I'm not
good. Good. Now,
is there any place in Hawaii that's safe?
Are there any places that are safe? You know, here's an interesting thing. Terry's dived on the Big Island, and the reefs are pretty. At least the last time you looked, Terry, right?
They're actually, I'll just fill you in on that one just really quick. I've been to most of the Hawaiian Islands over the last 5 years studying these coral diseases.
Yeah.
And yes, there we still have a lot of healthy reefs. And sure enough, when you pull up Stewart's data bank, there's not much electromagnetic energy going on there.
There's no military installations.
The Big Island, though, right now on the Kona side is suffering a huge bleaching across the island. Almost everywhere, we think it's because the water temperatures are literally warmer there from the pushing in of all the hurricanes. So we got a lot of different things going on right now.
I have another concern that just our love of, you know, these cell towers and all, we're just adding so much power.
Yep.
And, you know, corrosion rates will increase with temperature. So if you want something to corrode or get attacked by chlorine, perhaps heat it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't go against any of that concern. It sort of complements it. But the amount of dissolving of your calcium carbonate, to me, that's a big clue.
So, Dr. Ray, can you talk to us about some of the steps that you've taken in your clinic to protect your patients who are sensitive from the electromagnetic fields?
Yes, of course. The first thing is if they can get away from it, we have them get away, because sometimes they're living right by cell towers or they're getting some beams of radiation that are too strong to overcome, okay?
Right.
The second thing we would do is have them copper screened. And I don't know whether that will screen out your towers like that, Stuart. You'd have to tell me that. But the rest of it does seem to be.
And do you mean putting the screen in your walls and
put a copper screen on the
meters
and
to make on
the walls and sometimes in the over
I'm
the
sorry,
beds, you know?
Stuart, can you repeat what you just said? We didn't hear that.
Well, they have what's called a Faraday cage, which is basically a wire.
Yeah, that's what we're doing, is making a Faraday cage.
Yeah, make sure you ground it.
So what is that?
Well, we do ground them. But, you know, sometimes you got to be very careful, because in the big cities, the ground is full because they dump a lot of electricity going back to the station with that.
Pick up electrical
and sometimes you can increase your ground. We have a technique of neutralization where you go weaker dilutions of the different frequencies, and sometimes you can turn off the reaction with that, and they can take that as an injection. And then we would also
So is that like a homeopathic preparation?
Yeah, like it's like homeopathic, but it's sometimes stronger. And then we would also manipulate their calcium, magnesium, and different metals to see if sometimes they get sensitive to them, and we have to neutralize for that.
And do you do that orally or IV?
No, by intradermal.
Intradermal, uh-huh.
Yeah. And we have a controlled environment where we can do it, you see. And then we would also, there are suits now that made out of copper and cotton for the real bad ones. We just had a girl from Bermuda come in, a doctor, and she couldn't walk in the clinic because of the electricity, and we got her one of the copper suits. It was like a mini Faraday cage, and we were able to neutralize her, and she's done well and actually been able to go into Bermuda areas that are very toxic and do well.
Yeah, I've seen a website that has different hats and scarves and clothing options. And
yeah, EMF. I think it's called EMF, lessemf.com.
And it looked like they were mostly made out of silver. But
well, I don't like the silver as well. I mean, Stuart, you might comment on that. I find copper much better.
Stuart?
Yeah, well, copper is a little less expensive, but silver is
a it's much
conductor.
Less expensive.
Yeah, so silver or copper, but copper is a very good conductor. So, but yeah, you know, it's hard to escape it. It's really, you know, I would say turn off all your, you know, I have a timer on my Wi-Fi router. I have one in the house.
Yes, I would agree. And that's all the avoidance stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Screen your TV. And then we give them a lot of oxygen. We find out that the blood vessels, the microcirculation, is spasming. And even though you're getting oxygen across the lungs very good, it may not be taken out in the tissue.
You know, that I found that out. I went to an acupuncturist, and she pulled blood out of the area. I had muscle spasms, and it was extremely dark colored. She said totally unoxygenated
stagnated
blood.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell me, how do you do that with the oxygen? Is that
We have an apparatus that we give them, but 2 hours of anywhere from 4 to 8 liters seems to relieve the spasm, and you have to do that sometimes for about 18 days.
So 2 hours a day, basically.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we try to not use any plastic apparatuses with it. We use all metal and ceramic and things like that, glass. And those people who have low T cells, low gamma globulins, we may give them gamma globulin. With the T cells, we've got a thing we invented here at the Environmental Health Center called autogenous lymphocytic factor, which seems to boost their immune system again.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things you can do now, but of course, nothing's totally satisfactory for everybody.
Right. Right. Well, the RIMPAC, do you want to explain what that is? That was in 2012 the ships, the Navy ships from different parts of the world came here. And we really noticed, I don't know if it's documented, but a lot of people were having heart attacks, strokes.
Seizures.
Yeah, I would believe that.
My cardiologist told me he had something like six clients on the North Shore of Kauai. And everyone was admitted into emergency with heart palpitations, thinking they were having another heart attack.
You get vascular spasm, and then it hits a conducting system, which was run on electricity, you know?
Yeah.
So now, I'll mention that, you know, I looked at the warships, and, you know, basically modern-day warships are nothing but traveling radar platforms and missile launch.
Mm-hmm.
And the typical warship today has 50 to 100 radars and antennas on each ship, and you had 45 of them. You probably had another 2 to 3 times the EMF load when RIMPAC was in town.
Mm-hmm.
And no protection for the sailors.
No.
Yeah, and you know, but on a lot of these warships, say the sailors don't go on above deck, right? When the radars are operating, they stay below because they'll get shocked. I mean, radar, you know, electric shock and safety hazards around warships is a big deal. They know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So eating is one effect, but electrical currents is the other piece of this. That the current safety guidelines, at least for the public, don't really address it.
Yes,
that's my opinion.
Well, we unfortunately have run out of time for our Health Talk radio show, and I want to thank the three of you, Stuart, Dr. Ray, and our biologist here. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This is really fascinating and very important to be talking about this.
And you guys have helped me big time with my issues around this being out there every day, so I personally want to thank you for that.
Don't hesitate calling.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Ahuiho.
Okay, mahalo.
That doesn't matter. That was great. I learned something.
Coming up next, One World Radio with Richard.